Walt, if I can respond to that, KK4JBQ. Well, this is something that it took me something around 9 years in this hobby to run across anything approaching what you just described. And it's really valuable information. And that is to say that the same length of coax does not act the same on every frequency that you transmit on. It'll act the same on every frequency you receive. The transmission it requires that the coax do a different job, just put it that way. So it's not surprising to me that with RG-58 you had such terrible losses. I have a table here in front of me that says that at 2 meters and RG-58, your losses are really horrible, and it's something in the neighborhood of 27% efficiency. So, in other words, you're losing, what does that leave? 73% of your power. Now, if you step it up to RG-8, which is the first, it's passable. Your efficiency is 67%. You have to go all the way out to LMR 600 at 2 meters to have a really decent a really decent 77% efficiency. You're always going to lose some power in the transmission line. The very job of transmission is a difficult one. Those electrons are heading out there. They're going to launch off that antenna. Just electromagnetic energy flies out of the antenna into the air. And in order for it to do that, some of that energy will be lost in getting to the antenna. It is, by the way, I'm going to let this drop for a second.
KI4LZI4 here.
Andy. Good to have you in here, Andy. If you sometimes run across something that, it will not seem logical when you first read it, but an antenna tuner or an antenna matcher, which is what it really does, it matches the impedance, is more effective right at the feed point. Now that could be if the feed point is high, 45 feet in the air. They make small antenna matchers that will mount right at the feed point. So what you're doing is you're correcting the impedance mismatch right there at the antenna. So it's a lot more efficient. It's usually, however, adequate to have it in the shack near the radio. It's what most people do. But just keep in mind that when you're matching at that point near the radio, you are, if your tuner is there, then you're matching not only the antenna, but the feed line and the antenna as a combination. Now, you mentioned going to, 80 meters? The reason that happens is because of the wavelength. the wavelength at 2 meters is, oh gosh, just magnitudes of the frequency is magnitudes higher. So that is not as efficient running through the wire. Creates a lot more heat, and heat is loss of energy. Whenever you create heat in transmission, that does not equate to energy into the air. You're not transmitting, you're heating the wire. But the longer wavelength of 80 meters, it's going to be more efficient from the same run of coax. Now, does that make sense?
So this is the way I got it worked out in my mind. UHF and VHF, there's a lot more done. Now, don't laugh, but yeah, I have to dumb things down a little bit. So there's a lot more squiggly lines, which is the frequency, and there's a lot more of those bouncing up and down. So it has to work harder to get through that cable when it's bouncing up and down on all those squiggly lines, which is actually peak to peak. There's a lot more peaks on VHF, UHF, or UHF. I'll get to VHF in just a second. But when you drop down to high frequency, 3.915, the peaks are further apart. So the squiggly lines don't have to work so hard to get through the cable. I know that sounds funny, but I got to do what I got to do to get it in my mind. Is that, am I about right?
KK4JBQ. Another way to think about frequency and efficiency of transmission, equated to something that you already understand. You understand 60 hertz in your electrical supply in your house. So 60 times a second, the current reverses. 60 times a second, it's alternating current. Your transmission is alternating current. So it's moving toward the antenna and back. And if everything is tuned well, and your impedance is low, or it matches, I should say, your impedance is matched, then more of it radiates rather than return. But that return path is always there. The higher frequencies make that trip more often. It switches forward and back, forward and back, and that's per second, millions of times. So if you're 146, 610, that's 146.1 million times a second. So there's where your heat, especially if it's a mismatch, and what goes out to the antenna will not radiate because of the mismatch. It bounces back toward your transceiver. That's RF back into the shack. Bad thing. But it's also loss over the transmission line. When it's, 80 meters, roughly 3 megahertz, that's only 3 million times a second, if I can say it that way, that it switches or alternates toward the antenna and back toward the receiver. So the best situation is to have it all go out. Now, that's ideal, of course, but you'll always have some reflected power headed back toward the shack. If there's a great bit of it, and if you're using high power, say 1,000 watts, then that's a whole lot headed back toward your radio, and you want to use a choke, a one-to-one choke, to choke off that return path, keep it from coming back into the shack. And what it will do, what a choke does, is it says it's like a stop sign, and the electricity never stops. It'll head back toward the antenna. And it'll keep going back and forth until it wears itself out in heat, or a portion, a very small portion, might radiate. That's the magic of an antenna. KK4JBQ.
BQ, one quick question. K4OIM, if I could, Chad.
Go ahead, but don't forget about Andy in there.
I'm listening for Andy, but one quick question, Larry. In the same length of 450-ohm ladder line, how much loss is in it? I had that chart you got, but I can't find it.
I'll answer KK4JBQ. The simple answer to that is that ladder line, or a balanced line, which can take many forms and have many native impedances, like the regular TV lead-in that we used to use many years ago. It didn't have little windows cut in it, remember? But it was a balanced line. It was 300 ohms. Balanced line, the wires are further apart, and there are little windows cut. Now, all this affects the magnetic resonance of the wire. And that can be 450 ohms, that can be 600 ohms. In any case, it's balanced line going up to an antenna that's balanced. So immediately it has an advantage over coax, which is always unbalanced. One side and the other are quite different. You have that center conductor, and the other side is the shield which surrounds the center conductor. There are advantages to that, of course, but it results in an unbalanced feed line. So if you're using coax, you're using unbalanced feed line going up to a balanced antenna. It's kind of tricky. But your losses will be negligible. 1-2% maybe of loss on ladder line. Now that has its drawbacks, of course. We like coax because you can run it anywhere you want, any way you want. You can put it underground if you want. You cannot put ladder line underground. All of your signal will go directly to ground because there's no shield. The ladder line is just two balanced conductors. And that alternating current is going up and back on the lanes of traffic are equal, if I could put it that way. KK4JBQ, and do remember Andy out there.
What I was going to tell him is I found that heart wave here, but I put it in and I didn't know about all the various types of feed lines there was back then. All I knew about was 58 and 8. You're going to operate, if you're in a real bad location like I am, on any UHF frequency like 440 megahertz, 900 megahertz, 1.2 gigahertz, you better stick with the LMR series of coaxial cable for those particular frequency wires. And, you know, you could probably just hit you on 2 meters, but it's not as critical as it is on UHF. On UHF, if you're in a bad location, you better use the LMR series. I heard you used RG8, and I don't do too good here in this hole that I'm in at this time of year because of it. But it's very frequency dependent. KI4LZI port.
So that leads me to the point where I learned. So I moved over to 440 at 40 watts, and the loss was even more. So I think that's when my mind kind of said, okay, well, there's a lot more squiggly lines going through that cable on 440 than there is 146. compared to, you know, 3.195 or whatever, 3915, whichever one it was. So, but that was very helpful for me to see that on a meter. It took me a little bit to interpret what I was seeing, and I went back and checked it a couple of times because I couldn't believe how much loss was going on there. But once I took a minute and said, okay, well, you know, there's anything wrong with my meter, it just clicked. So, yeah. So the other thing that I wanted to tell you was kind of a little funny story here. Got my cable laid out on my workbench here, got the ends laid out, and I have a little comb, a little pick that I use to separate the shield. So when I put the PL259 on, I can peel the shield back and put it under the connector at the back of the PL259. Well, you have to solder the center connector in. I didn't want to walk down to the shop to get my pick, so I picked up a mechanical pencil that had the little silver tip on the end of it, and I was using that for a comb. Well, at some point in time, during combing all of that out, there was almost an entire stick of 0.05 millimeter lead that just fell out of the bottom of the pencil and fell onto the workbench. And I was trying to solder on one of the center connectors on the PL259, and I didn't have my glasses on. I mean, I can see pretty well, but I could see a lot better with my glasses. So I said, okay, well, let me use up this little piece of solder here. Graphite does not solder very well. It doesn't matter how hot you get it with a soldering iron. it will not melt. And I'm ashamed to say it took me longer than I want to tell you to figure out what was going on. But I just thought that was kind of funny. I just thought I'd let you know. But anyway, thanks for the info, Andy and Larry.
Funny chat, trying to solder a piece of graphite. It's polymerized today. If it's a modern mechanical pencil lead, it's polymerized, but still, it won't melt until you reach about 2,500 degrees. KK4JBQ.
Would advise you to pick up when you ever had a decent ham fest that's got any size. That, you see, that says silver tip antennas at Hamfest sometimes. I got this very chart Larry's talking about right here that I picked up, I think, over there at Hamfest in Spartanburg 4 or 5 years ago, where it talks about the feed line signal loss attenuation and feed line efficiency chart that he's talking about here that I got from over there at Hamfest and silver tip antennas.
KI4LZI4. Where I am, I'll be a son of a gun, Andy. I've got to say, I've been looking everywhere for that chart, and it's right on the back of the enhanced band plan. I've got the same chart, and I'm sitting here asking Larry all these questions, and I had it right in front of me. Thank you, Andy.
Chad, all three of us have the same chart in hand. And next time you have a chance at a ham fest, usually, Silver Tip Antenna has these laminated band plans, and all that information that we've been referring to is on the back. Yes, it is. KK4JBQ.
KO4NUE for station ID. So, now, let me interpret what that means in my mind. That amount of loss, it doesn't matter if I'm putting 40 watts into out of the back of my radio to hit that repeater. I can hit this repeater with about 4 watts. It's scratchy, but I can hit it. So you might be thinking, anybody out there listening, and I want to verify if I'm thinking right with you guys, if all I want to do is hit a repeater or hit this repeater, then that's no big deal. But if I want to do simplex, that's when it becomes a big deal, right? Because if I'm pushing 40 watts out of the back of the radio, but only 20 watts are getting to my antenna, then that's going to really affect me on simplex. I'm pretty sure I'm right. Is that correct?
You got that absolutely correct, because you can't afford any inefficiencies on simplex unless you're at a place like a ham fest, a pumpkin fest, or a flea market where you're practically looking at one another. In a case like that, you can run a half a watt to a watt just with rubber duck antenna, but if you're trying to talk any distance on simplex, all the efficiency you can get, you need. KI-4LCI-4.
There's a couple things to keep in mind to understand what you just explained. Your observation is absolutely correct. But the reason that VHF and UHF as well relies on line of sight, and of course reflections and that sort of thing are to your advantage, but because the energy that goes up will not reflect. The frequencies are so high that you have no advantage from the ionosphere. It's what is called ground wave or line of sight. Sky wave, all of that that's headed toward the sky, all of that is lost because nothing will reflect it. It's such a high frequency. So this is where VHF and UHF differ from HF. The frequencies there are lower, and they will be reflected by the ionosphere, so you get a reflection from the ionosphere from sky waves, and that will give you distance, and referred to as hops, because if you're transmitting toward a body of water, it'll go up, it'll reflect down, and reflect off the water, and go right back up again and take a second hop. KK4JBQ.
I was thinking that was correct. So, all right. Well, that was, you know, we talked about antennas last Tuesday, and I'm a whole lot better than I was. I will get the impedance thing figured out, but I've kind of resigned myself to saying, okay, well, I don't fully understand impedance. But I know it needs to be this number, so I'll have to figure out a way. This week I'm going to focus on when I study. This little handbook that Walt gave me has been very helpful. I mean, it's very well written in a way I can understand it. But if we talk about something and I don't try to apply it during the week, then, you know, I just wasting my time and everybody else's, and I'm just not interested in that. So I decided to start with the transmission path and trying to understand everything the radio is doing through every link in this chain all the way to the antenna. So this week or next week, I'll get on the antennas. But I'm gonna move to the high frequency observations that I've made this week. And Walt, I know you're probably going to fuss at me, but I'm just going to kind of tell you how this played out. So I ordered my radio before I got my license. I had scheduled to take my test. That way I was, what I was thinking was, okay, well, I'm going to take my test in 2 weeks, my technician ticket, and when I get my license, I'll have my radio and everything I need. Well, the radio took 120 days to get here. So I had my license, and at the time, it was just difficult buying any kind of radio. So I bought a mobile rig to try to at least get on the air and do something until my Yaesu came in, which had the high frequency side of it. So when the radio came in, I set it up with a temporary antenna and RG58 coax. No grounding, anything. Was just excited. Let me do it. I'm just going to do a quick test and da-da-da. And KO4NUE for station ID. Short. The radio has not been grounded. The tuner has not been grounded. Nothing has been grounded other than, well, nothing really. And I have been up on a single sideband trying to learn to pass traffic. And I have really been frustrated because I just cannot hear. It is so noisy that it just, I've aggravated everybody trying to repeat the message so I can get it on a piece of paper and write it down. So here's my observation for this week. So once I put my antenna in, I grounded, put a ground rod beside the house, and ran the coax through a polyphaser for lightning protection, and grounded it with an 8-foot copper grounding rod. I came outside the window where the radios are, and I drove another 8-foot grounding rod and grounded, ran a ground wire into the ham shack and grounded my radio, my tuner, anything that requires a ground. It is grounded to an earth ground. So when I got up on the single sideband that night just to observe and test, I could not believe the difference in the amount of noise. It was unbelievable. I could actually hear and enjoy the radio. So here's what I have deduced. Electronically and magnetically, or electromagnetically, this planet is very noisy, I'm assuming, because my radio is made to pick up electromagnetic frequencies. So I have to assume that all of that noise I'm hearing is electromagnetic activity. And when I grounded the station, evidently most of that ambient noise is going straight to ground. Am I thinking right here?
4NUEK4OIM. I can't believe that. I ain't gonna fuss at you, Chad. I've listened to you whine and cry about that noise. I did not know your station wasn't grounded. Man, the storms we've been having, you're lucky you didn't, you don't have to have a direct lightning hit to destroy a station. Believe me, I know. I've had two took out. I mean, my complete station, computers, TVs, everything took out just from a static lightning crash. Well, one of them come in over the phone line and ran the phone line into my computer, which was grounded, and the radio was grounded, the tuner was grounded, the oscilloscope, I ground everything. But, man, Chad, if you need another ground rod, I still got one or two over here. And, Chad, another thing I was going to, I was wondering, you said you're going to build your antenna. what band are you going to build that antenna for? KO4NUE, K4, OIM.
Here's Walt. And I don't want to get into multiband and all of that. I want to start with the basics and just get a simple dipole up that I build. And I know that when I build it, that's going to force me to get the measurements right. And then that's going to force me, because when I build the dipole, I'm committed. Then that's going to force me to learn ladder line next. So I've already knocked the transmission path out. I feel like I've got a good understanding of the coax and how it works and what it does. I realize that my antenna has to be cut to a certain length. One conductor goes to one side of the dipole and the other conductor goes to the other side of the dipole. Now, once that's done, I can understand the antenna and how it works because I built it. Then that's going to force me to go to ladder line or a feed line. And that's when I put myself in a position to where, okay, well, you got the coax fixed. You got the antenna built. Now that's forcing me to get a handle on the matching side of it. That's just, I know that sounds strange, but that's the way that works in my mind. And the other thing, Walt, is I don't know what to tell you about grounding. I accept full responsibility for it. It's my station, my radios, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, if you don't know, you don't know. And that's all I can say, you know. But this book you gave me, I've been looking through it and reading through it, and it talks about how important grounding is. So I said, okay, well, let me, you know, I don't think he's not going to do anything but protect me from lightning, so let me just go ahead and just do it. Book says to do it, I'm going to do it. Well, lesson.
You're going to find out on HF there's all kinds of sources of noise interference you will hear that you won't hear on VHF or UHF, whether it's static crashes, that's natural due to lightning. You might pick up static crash within a 500-mile radius of your location. And you just cheered one of them that you were just talking about. On the current front issue of QST, they talk about finding and fixing power line noise. You may have cheered some of that unbeknownst to you. KI4LCI portal.
KBQ. I had it. Chad, there's one thing I want to mention since you are entertaining the idea of perhaps using ladder line. You can use a balanced to unbalanced transformer to take your feed line most of the way toward the house using ladder line. And then when it comes through the wall, you change over to coax.
This is what what is known generally as a balance. It's a balanced to unbalanced transformer. It'll matter which one of the ladder lines you choose because they're different impedances, you know, either the 450 ohm or the 600 ohm. You want to choose the balance depending on which one of those you use. But you can make that transformation just outside the house, just outside the shack. And then bring it through the wall, no problem, because you've transferred it to coax, no problem of running it through masonry or even a steel door like I've had to do. So that'll work for you. And when it gets into the shack, you just put it right on the back of the radio because it's 50 ohms there, and it goes after to the ballon. It's transformed to the impedance that the ladder line is expecting. It goes up to the antenna very efficiently. KK4JPQ.
So, all right. Well, let me get the antenna built, and I'll go from there. So, here's another observation that I've made that I'm not understanding. I think I know. I don't know how or why. So, let me make sure I got this repeater. KO4NUE, station ID. So, me and Anna spent most of the day on Sunday getting the antenna up in the air and secure. I bought the antenna from the wire man, and there's about a 30-something feet ladder line on it, going basically up to a dipole. It's called a mystery antenna. It's multi-band or whatever. But, so, I've got the dipole up, and the connector for the ladder line is probably about 4 feet off of the ground. Then I ran my coax through the PVC pipe hooked up to my ladder line, came in the ham shack, and I was a little bit sweaty, and snaked the coax through the wall and got ready to hook it up to the back of the radio, that goes to the tuner first, radio or tuner, whichever one. So I just reached and grabbed the coax on the PO259 connector, and I got a little bit of a shock. It was not bad. It didn't hurt me or anything. It was just there. It was kind of like a tingle. So I hesitated for a minute and thought, well, I'm pretty sure that was a small shock. I'm not sure if I need to hook this up to my radio, because I don't know what that's going to do. But before I go any further, was I imagining things, or is that possible, or why would that have happened if it is possible?
With capacitors, it can happen. Because the capacitors, in a lot of cases, are used to control the power in. The reason they don't put these batteries in these newer scanners like they used to anymore, they use capacitors to hold the power back, to hold the memory in them. And your tuner's going to have some electronics in it. Go ahead, Larry. KI4LZI portable.
JBQ. If, as you describe it, Chad, you have nothing else connected to this antenna, and you got a shock when you touched the metal of a connector, PL259, you got the result of a static charge. It's not going to hurt you. It could be several hundred or several thousand volts. A static charge is like that. But you'll only get a tingle because there's almost no amperage, which is the dangerous part of electricity. It's a static charge that builds up. The air moving across the elements of the antenna will create static electricity. That has to go somewhere. And it should go directly to ground, right at the base of the antenna. There, you have one. You mentioned your grounding arrangement, and there's a lot of conversation about grounding your shack. The important thing to do is to understand what electricity wants to do. It wants to go to ground. It wants to equalize itself. It doesn't want to be negative. It doesn't want to be positive. It wants to be zero. And it will go to ground and have that zero potential as quickly as it can find a path, any path. When you grab that connector, you were the path. That static charge realized it could go, it could move. It'll stay static or stationary until it finds a path away or out of that coax. So grounding an antenna at the base of the antenna is a really fine thing to do. It bleeds off that static charge, which is always being created, just the wind, and it's more so in dry air, which you'll find in the winter. You get a lot more static. Now that comes in, and if it comes to your radio, it's going to be crackling and popping all the time. You'll have a really bad noise floor, really high noise floor, because of the static that's coming through your antenna. Get rid of it as quick as possible, as near to the base of the antenna as possible. And all of your grounds should be connected. Your household ground, your station ground, the ground at your antenna. Those are three separate grounds. They should all be connected to one another. Just one ground is how that will look to electricity. It's all at the same potential. KK4JPQ.
UEK4OIM. I was putting up a G5RV one time, and it wasn't winter, but it was cool, and the wind was blowing. And when I grabbed that PL259, I thought I'd stuck my hand into a wall outlet. It woke me up. So I've been hit by that static. And the wind blowing across that line, in dry condition, it'll cause a static buildup on that line. No wonder you were getting noise, though. You didn't have nothing grounded. Wow.
These repeaters up there, up here, when the wind's really, really blowing, as high as these repeater antennas are, it has the tendency sometimes, that is, even if there ain't no other issues, to kind of create static interference on here sometimes when the wind's blowing. And I've been up to this site here where this one is before, and up at the 450-foot level up there on that big tire, I mean, the wind really plays havoc with this repeater antenna. Y'all go ahead and carry on. I'm just going to be listening from here on, because I've got to take insulin shortly. KI4LCI portal.
UEK4OIM. One more thing, Chad. Now, I think Larry will agree with me. Anytime you put up a multiband antenna, you're going to lose a lot of your signal because, like Larry said, I believe last Tuesday night, well, any antenna is a compromised antenna. But since we've been discussing antennas, I forget his call sign, but Dave Kessler, he's got a bunch of YouTube videos I like to watch. And I've been watching today about antennas and dipole antennas. If you cut a half wavelength dipole, well, for instance, a 20-meter dipole is 33.5 feet long, I believe it is, and that way it'll work the whole band with a good SWR. But the height above ground for maximum efficiency should be 33 foot above ground. And he demonstrated the different wave patterns and the lobes you get off of that antenna. Now, a lot of people, they say the higher the better. That might be true for receiving, but it is not true for transmitting, is it, Larry?
Yes, that's true. There are, Chad, I don't wonder that you're a little frustrated. I was for years, and you're coming along a lot faster than I have, than I did. There's a lot of things to remember all at once. The most important thing to remember, as far as anything that's hobby goes, is that everything affects everything. You don't make one change without everything else changing at the same time. And that's the spirit you have to have. and the patience, an infinite amount of patience, I suppose. But you're doing all the right things. Your planning and your execution, the questions that you're asking, all of this is just as it should be. KK4JPQ.
KO4NUE for station ID. So last thing, and then we'll call it a night. Lesson learned. So after everything is grounded, the antenna's up, and I get into the test, you know, into testing and making sure everything is good and see if I can tell a difference. I was just really excited, and I thought, okay, this is a week or two of frustration. I'm just going to sit back, and I'm going to enjoy the radio for a few minutes and just enjoy some pleasant conversation with somebody in another state or another country. I mean, that's kind of why we do this hobby. So, I enjoy that thing. So, I'm, you know, just happy. Let me put it that way. So, I contacted my cousin. He lives in Pickens, not too far from Roland. And he has got his amateur class license. And I just have my general ticket. And we have been trying to make contact since I got my general license. And we have not been able to contact one another. I think we figured out what it is. But here's my point. I called him and said, hey, let's try to make contact. I've got my antenna moved, got everything grounded, blah, blah, blah. So, not thinking, he says, okay, meet me at this frequency. So, I went to that frequency, and I put my call out there, and I got told real quick that I was out of my frequency band. And, I mean, he wasn't angry. He wasn't disrespectful or anything. But it embarrassed. I was embarrassed. And I just, and my cousin heard it too, you know, and he called and said, hey, man, I'm sorry. I should have caught that. And we didn't. But any young hams out there listening, I put my call out there, and then I hear this completely clear signal. No static. Really loud. He had to have like a 20,000-watt amplifier or something. And he said, Mr. Hightower, are you a general class operator? No call sign, nothing. I said, yes, sir, I am. And he said, you are in the extra class bands. You are out of your band, your operation something. You are out of your operating limits. You cannot operate on this frequency. And so, lesson learned. There went my, I'm happy to back to being frustrated again. So I just cut the radio off for the day and said, hey, I'll try tomorrow. So, lesson learned. I didn't mean to do it. It just happened. And it just embarrassed the snot out of me.
AUEK4OIM. Chad, if you're going to make contact with your cousin over there, as close as you are, you're going to have to try it on 80 meters. in the general portion of the van. But I had somebody knock on my door one day, and you had one of them little peepholes. I looked out, and I thought it was the Blues Brothers out there. Yeah, I opened the door, and they had their credentials hanging around their neck. I didn't even get a letter. I got a personal visit, but they checked my station out, and I was in the clear, and they just told me to observe quiet hours. That was between 7 o'clock at night and 7 o'clock in the morning, and that was fine with me because I was working the third shift, and I was at work.
KQ4JBQ. Had it there. When Walt says you need to be in the general portion of the band, let's back up one more step. You need to have a band plan in front of you whenever you operate. Not just to know that you're within your license privileges, of course you do know, you need to know that, but also whether you're going to be using upper side band or lower side band, whether you're in the phone portion of the band or the digital portion of the band. The band plan is it's critical to have it right in front of you all the time when you're operating. So to be in the phone portion of the band and within your license privilege, you need to be between 3.8 and 4.0 megahertz. So when you try to communicate again, make sure you're communicating between 3.8 and 4.0, KK4JBQ.
Right, KO4NUE, station ID. So here's what I did to rectify that. So I have a U.S. amateur radio band plan here from AARL. It's printed out on a sheet. Got a little red and green lines all over it. Well, it's complicated to use for me because, okay, well, I know I can't use anything in red. I can only use what's in green. And then I have to go to the green bands and say, okay, well, that's general, and then that's amateur, extra, and you know, I have to pick that information out to use it. So what I've done to rectify that is I've got a spreadsheet that I've printed out here in front of me, and it's tacked on the wall. If I want to go to 80 meters, here is the frequencies I can operate in. So I've got 80, 40, 20, 17, 15, 12, and 10 right in front of me. So I know that it's at eye reference. Now today, I've got halfway through it, but I have gone into the radio and set up edge limits on the radio so that, for example, if I get close to 3.8 or 4.0 on 80 meters, when I get close to that limit, the radio makes a noise and lets me know, hey, that's the limit you set, and you're coming up close to it. So that won't happen again. It just really embarrassed me, and he wasn't, like I said, he wasn't disrespectful or anything, but I've got that situation fixed, because that's not going to happen again.
All of us, KK4JBQ, I won't relate mine, it's too embarrassing and it's too late to do that. One other thing I want to pass along to you that'll help you in your studies this week. You say that you want to understand impedance a little better. And I've learned something just recently which has clarified this to me in ways I really, there's not enough time to tell you. And that is, it's not an equation. I know you're about like I am with mathematics, But it is a this is that type of thing. Impedance is inductance and reactance. As far as an antenna goes, an antenna feed line, impedance is inductance and reactance. Now you'll note that I didn't mention resistance at all. Now you might say, well, resistance is measured in ohms. Yes, but impedance is measured in ohms too. And that was the clarification that I had to get straight in my mind before I actually could use this knowledge, is to realize that the unit of measure is the same, the ohm. But if you measure the resistance of a wire, it's expressed in ohms, yes, but that's pure resistance. Impedance is inductance and reactance. So in study what inductance and reactance is, together they are impedance. Now you notice I didn't use an arithmetic term like plus, minus, divided by, equals. I didn't use anything like that because it changes. That's the other magic part of using the airwaves. Everything affects everything. And so you can't be hard. You can't think of it as a hard and fast rule. Like, let's say if I had said impedance equals inductance plus reactance. No, it doesn't. It could be minus reactance or divided by reactance or square root of reactance. You just have to, and so let that guide you in your study to understand feed line impedance. The two words of inductance and reactance, that together will point you toward the understanding of impedance. Is that clear enough? KK4JBQ.